not sure I could. They say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting. I'm through with doubt. There's nothing left for me to figure out. I've paid a price.
Of September 11th, 2007 edition of the American Awakening. I'm your host, Michael Herzog, and I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. Well, here we are, the sixth anniversary of 9/11. And I have to tell you, I've been listening to shows, this network, that network, the other network for the last couple of days. And the majority of the shows are talking about 9/11 and recapitulating the events surrounding it and anomalies and so forth. So all I'm going to say about that, I've got a great show for you today, folks. As you know, I've got John Hankey coming up. We're going to talk about JFK Jr. today. Got a lot of information to bring forward about that. So the only thing that I'm going to say about 9/11, just so I can restate and make sure you're aware of my position, is 9/11 was an inside job, doo-dah, doo-dah. And that's all I have to say about that. So you understand where my position is coming from on 9/11, because we've got a lot of stuff to cover today, and there are other shows on the network that's recapitulating 9/11. I've got a lot of interesting clips and viewing on my website, www.theamericanawakening.org. If you're interested in, reliving the anniversary of it, you can go in there and watch some movies or see some clips or so forth. At any rate, I'm going to move on. There's one thing I want to mention. I'm going to bring my guest up here after the first break. But there's one thing that I want to make sure that you understand. Folks, look, this economic situation going on right now, we're teetering on the brink of an economic disaster. And as we all know, most of my listeners, some of the new listeners may not know, but the Fed has been injecting money into the stock market like nobody's business. We're sitting right on the precipice, right on the cliff of a financial collapse. And so if you have not already, I want to remind everybody to give Robbie Noel a call, 800-691-7898. This guy is, as far as the purchase of gold or silver, he's going to treat you better than anybody. And by the way, I'm not getting paid to say this. I have personally dealt with, I believe, three different dealers in Phoenix on the purchase or sale of gold. And I have to tell you that none of them offer the best value that Robbie Noel offers. So if you haven't already, and if you've been thinking about converting annuities or life insurance cash values or borrowing out of your insurance policies, which would be a good idea, because I'll tell you what, if you've been watching the gold market for the last week or so, it's going up dramatically, folks. I think it's gone up like, 30 bucks, maybe 40 bucks an ounce just in the last week, which is phenomenal. So if you haven't already converted assets over and bought gold, you need to do it now, because I'll tell you what, it's about ready to go through the roof. And I'm talking about whether it be an annuity, whether it be cash value out of a life insurance policy, whether it be equity out of your mortgage, wherever the equity comes from, you need to convert it into gold, because gold is set, it's already taking off, but it's going to go exponentially higher. And the predictions that I'm hearing that are being made about how high gold is going to go, and I heard some outlandish ones. As a matter of fact, I heard a couple of them from, or one of them from Bob Chapman, who's on John Stadtmiller's show every week, and he was saying it could go as high as $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 an ounce, and in the not too distant future. So again, I have to emphasize, call Robbie, 800-691-7890. If you haven't already got some, get some. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening. I will be back after the break with my guest, John Hankey. We're going to talk about JFK Jr. Stick with me. It's going to be a great show, folks.
Hi. heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes 4 books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
Pinch me, Bill. I can't believe it. A few months ago, I couldn't even afford gas for my car. And here we are with season tickets on the 50-yard line.
I know what you mean, John. I remember the day you saw my new car and asked me if I robbed Bill Gates. Our lives sure have changed since we discovered DidYouRobBillGates.com.
I was struggling to make ends meet. Now I've got a new car and a college fund for Lisa when she graduates from high school next year. And I owe it all to you because you told me about DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Hey, John, we all win when the money problems disappear. I want to tell everybody because the more people we have on the success team, the better it works. It's hard for the little guy these days. We pool our resources to level the playing field.
So the more people that go to www.DidYouRobBillGates.com, the more cash for everybody. What a concept!
Back, Michael Herzog, the American Awakening, coming to you live from hot, steamy Phoenix, Arizona. Come a little bit closer and hear what my knowledgeable guest, John Hankey, has to say about JFK Jr. John, are you with me today?
Hey, Michael, I'm here and happy.
You're
How are you doing?
Happy. Well, happy 9/11 to you. There you go.
I've been corresponding with people this morning, emails, and I'm just feeling encouraged that the world is waking up and things are moving in a direction that's positive, so...
You know, and I can understand that, and I'll tell you what, and there's a certain vibe that you have at times. Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down, and what's funny is I'm up today. I feel the same. There's a feeling that has come over me that it's an enlightenment, and I just feel like yes, finally the world is starting to wake up. And go ahead.
I have a joke for your listeners, which is that I was on the radio this morning with the Jesuits. The Jesuit College in Los Angeles is Loyola Marymount, and somebody I know somebody who's on their radio station. And there's a lot of people who point to the Jesuits as being involved with the Vatican and involved with the most horrible crimes in the history of the world, including September of 11th. But you know, this morning the good guys have taken over Xavier radio station in Los Angeles, and we were talking about the, you know, I was a teacher for 20 years, and I'm on a leave at the moment, and I'm planning to go back, but it just seemed that there were too many, you know, giant things going on that needed to be addressed right now and that needed my full attention rather than now rather than later. Anyway, the guy asked me, you know, so what's your feeling, what's your impression in a nutshell about September 11th? And when you're a teacher and, you know, you spend all night and maybe it's all week coming up with a lesson plan, and you walk in the door and a kid raises his hand and asks you a brilliant question, or something else happens, there's a fight in the schoolyard or whatever, you know, there's some event that takes place that's had an impact on the children, and it gives you an opportunity to make a point that you couldn't possibly make better at any other time. And so you set things aside and you go off in that direction. And I said that 9/11 is a teachable moment, that that when I was 18 years old, I had short hair and I was conservative and I was a straight A student, and my mother asked me what I was going to do about the draft. Did I tell you this story? And I said, what do you mean, Mom? And she says, you know, what are you going to do about the draft? And I said, well, I'm going to go. It's, you know, it's my duty. Vietnam calls. And then somebody showed me the Zapruder film, and that was my teachable moment. And I didn't stop being a serious student, and I didn't stop working very hard. I just stopped believing anything that anybody told me, and I stopped believing things just because they were in the history book. And I, in fact, became a much, much more serious student, because anything that I read, I had to then go find, you know, at least four or five other sources from divergent points of view before I would even consider believing that it might be true. But that when the guys on September 11th, and I guess we're going to take this up more tomorrow, but on September 11th, it's, I think, very apparent that there were supposed to be three planes that flew into New York and hit buildings. And, right, I mean, building, in fact, there were people, and I've heard it on video, I've heard one of the firemen say there's a third plane coming in, and I've got this book on my bookshelf written by one of the, some New York Times reporter. And there were reports that a third plane was headed in. Of course, you only get those reports in real time. They've all been buried in the media. There's no discussion of where that story came from and why it was ever reported. But when you see Building 7 come down in the afternoon, it's clear that Building 7 was intended to be hit by a plane. But apparently Flight 97 or whichever one it was delayed by some, you know, 50 minutes, so that it was just, they decided it was too ridiculous that 2 hours later that a hijacked plane was going to come floating into New York City and without any air defenses being in place. And so they called off the plane hitting Building 7, but then at 5:30 in the afternoon they decided nobody's looking and they brought it down. And that's the huge teachable moment. I mean, any number of people who were standing on the line stepped over when they saw the footage of Building 7 coming down without any explanation and said, okay, that's it, I'm in, and joined the 9/11 truth movement, Stephen Jones being one of them. I mean, it's Building 7 that pushed him over. But so that, and I mentioned yesterday, I think, that Dylan Avery has said that he'd had 300 million downloads of Loose Change, so that this is not only a teachable moment for the people of the United States, this is a teachable moment for the world. The entire world is getting to learn a lesson about how much confidence they can put into the media and how much confidence they can put into the words that come out of the mouths of their politicians and how much confidence they can put in the history books, and that they have, you know, they're having the experience that I had 30 years ago, that they need to be more serious if they thought they were serious about their patriotism. If they thought they were serious about the amount of energy that they put into paying attention to world events and their commitment as a citizen and as a human being to the good of the earth, if they thought they were serious about it, well, they need to at least redouble those efforts, if not quadruple them.
Now, let me stop you for a second here, John, and ask: are you of the opinion that Flight 93, which crashed in Shanksville, you know, obviously there's a lot of questions whether it actually crashed, whether it was shot down. I mean, it crashed either way, but you know, whether it was shot down by a missile, are you of the opinion that that particular plane was targeting the World Trade Center 7?
I think that that's the easiest guess. I think I'm very, very much persuaded that Building 7 was supposed to get hit by some plane. The easy guess is that it was Flight 93. I'm not persuaded that any plane got shot down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The, you know, the coverage and loose change of, but in many other videos, of the coroner, right, says that he went to Shanksville and looked around for 20 minutes and didn't find a single body and then gave up and went and did something else because there was
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, I've got a couple of video clips on my website regarding Flight 93, and I mean, the only reason I asked you the question is because that's the first that I'd heard that particular theory that that's possible that 93 was headed for the World Trade Center 7. You know, I've heard that it was headed for the White House, but not World Trade Center 7. So you know, I was just curious as to whether that was your belief. And well, now that I think of it, that's a distinct possibility. It could have been.
Somebody mentioned it to me at least a year ago, and I've been stewing on it for a year. And I would say that this morning I've woke up, and there's no doubt in my mind that I've stewed on it long enough. It's the guys who planned this, and you know, we'll talk about this more tomorrow. And it may perhaps we should have.
I was going to say, we're going to have to shift gears here shortly.
Yeah, it's not a problem. It's not a problem.
Okay.
But I can't, it's hard for me to conceive that the original plan, they're not that stupid. As stupid and as incompetent as they are, they would never have planned to bring down Building 7 with no excuse. They would have planned to have, right? I mean, it's just too flagrant. It's just too in your face. I don't think, in fact, that they planned, they hoped to not have a shot from the grassy knoll. And if the driver and the passenger in Kennedy's limousine had turned around and seen that Kennedy was dead, they would have radioed the guy at the grassy knoll, which the passenger, I forget his name, the Secret Service man in the passenger seat, did. He gets on the radio and says, I'm sure, he says, go. And the guy on the grassy knoll gets tapped on the shoulder, meaning fire, and he fires. They would have preferred not to do that, but they had to do it because the people shooting from the rear had missed. I think that they would never, right, the plan was not to kill Kennedy from the grassy knoll. That was the backup, and it's what they had to go to, and it's unfortunate for them that they did because, you know, I would not be here today having this conversation with you. God knows where I would have been instead if I hadn't seen the Zapruder film and Kennedy's brains getting blown out the back of the limousine. I'm not open to the suggestion that they planned to just bring down Building 7 la-di-da without any sort of an explanation or coverage. That wasn't part of the plan, but they did it anyway because that's how things worked out. The Flight 93, you can look it up. Flight 93 was delayed at least 50 minutes taking off, and I don't know why, and you know, if it had been, it didn't end up turning around for another 50 minutes. So it's, you know, it's very, very late coming into the scene. And they just, somebody made a decision. Karl Rove, no doubt, said, we'll say that the passengers took it over and think of all the, you know, the great mileage we'll get out of this let's roll BS. Anyhow,
Well, if I might interject one thing, and this is up on my website, by the way. As far as Flight 93 is concerned, yes, in my research, I am of the opinion that it was shot down. I ran across an interesting video clip, and it is posted on my website, that, you know, the supposed crash area of Flight 93 where you have that, you know, there's a hole with what looks like two wings, right?
If you say so, there's a hole. I'll give you the hole.
No, I mean, but then there's also a couple of what would look like small wings that are coming out from the hole. And what's interesting is that in this video clip, this particular slit, if you will, I'll call it a slit, dimensions which would you know, you could attribute to wings of an airplane. They have a clip, or they have a video or pictures that go back to 1994. That particular slit was embedded. It was a dark black mark that had been caused by something. They have video clips from 1994 that was already there. And what they are alleging is that somebody put a bomb, exploded a bomb right in the middle so it looked like an airplane. Now, that video clip is on my website, www.theamericanawakening.org, and people can go in there and look at it from themselves. But that's just one of many different pieces of evidence that I've looked at that has caused me to conclude
that, yes, indeed, it was shot down, along with video of mainstream news reporting a several-mile area of debris strewn all over, including body parts, that was reported once and then never reported again. And I have that video clip on my website as well. And speaking of websites, I want to put yours out. It's bushkilledjfk.com. And with that, we're going to go to
all your favorite books and videos. Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web 24 hours a day at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. And make sure to tell them you heard about us on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Take the heat out of your sleep. The Bedfan Personal Cooling System will work for anyone that is a hot sleeper, regardless of the reason. It gives you a deep, restful sleep, the way nature intended. No more tossing and turning. Say goodbye to sleepless nights. So ask yourself, are you a hot sleeper and really want to sleep cooler? A woman who suffers from the effects of menopause, including night sweats derived from hot flashes, have a medical condition that causes your body to get hot at night, or just want to save money on your air conditioning bill. It works instantly. No tools or assembly required. Don't worry. The Bedfan fits short beds, tall beds, beds with footboards, sleigh beds, water beds, and many other types of beds. If you want great relief and total comfort, give us a call at 1-210-632-8280. That's 1-210-632-8280. Or visit our site at bedfan.com, your provider for great sleep.
Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
All right, we're back. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, coming to you live from Phoenix, Arizona. Last break, there was a little technical glitch there, and I apologize to the listeners, but walked right into the commercial without any music. So that won't happen again, I'm sure. So we'll get right back to my guest. This is a short segment coming up to the bottom of the hour, John Hanke. Now, we were talking about Flight 93. At some point, we need to shift gears and go into JFK. Have you got anything else to add on 93, John?
I'm ready to let it go. We're going to take it up, is it tomorrow that we're going to take up 9/11 anyhow?
I believe so.
Yes,
yeah.
No, it is. It is. So let's let it go.
Yeah, okay.
And
all
what
right.
I wanted to start off today with was a question for your listeners to ponder and for them to ponder during the commercial break, because we'll come back and try to answer it. But yesterday we discussed a number of things. One of them is that Prescott Bush was the right-hand man of Averell Harriman, who was one of the most powerful and wealthy bankers in the world. And he was the chief executive officer of Union Bank of New York, which was a Nazi bank. It held money for Fritz Thyssen. But he was also a partner of Brown Brothers Harriman, which is this major investment firm. The point that I want to make is that Prescott Bush was an enormously well-positioned and powerful guy. He was in Skull and Bones with all of these other, with the Rockefellers and with the Harrimans both. And so he was very, very, very well connected. He could have gotten his son a job in any of the several very large and very powerful banks that were controlled by the Harrimans and the Rockefellers. But instead, he sent his son, and there's really no issue about this, he sent his son to work for a CIA recruiter. He pushed his son, right? I mean, George Herbert Walker Bush did not go to work for Neil Mallon, a CIA recruiter, according to Prescott Bush, who has written of it, right? This is documented. It's in his papers that George Herbert Walker went to work for Neil Mallon, but he didn't go to work for Neil Mallon because he knew Neil Mallon. He went to work for Neil Mallon because his father knew Neil Mallon and sent him to work for him. My point is that his father is pushing him into these various affairs, and that George Bush then ends up getting named by J. Edgar Hoover in a memo entitled Assassination of John F. Kennedy. Now, if the memo hadn't talked about anything else, that would be bad enough, I would think, right? I mean, if I were named in a memo written by the head of the FBI entitled Destruction of the Oklahoma City Federal Building, I'd be very, very, very nervous about that, right? That they were trying to make some kind of connection between me and the destruction of that building. So Bush is named in the memo, and then the memo just happens to discuss the CIA's what Hoover calls misguided anti-Castro Cubans, that is to say, who are very, very clearly participants in the assassination by their own several admissions. Sturgis, I believe Sturgis admitted it. In any case, Marita Lorenz admitted it, right, that the CIA Operation 40, the official misguided anti-Castro Cubans, were involved in the assassination. Hunt confessed it. And Bush is then named as a supervisor by J. Edgar Hoover in a memo entitled Assassination of John F. Kennedy. My question that I'd like your listeners to consider is this one. If you were as rich and as powerful as Prescott Bush, why wouldn't you get your son a nice, soft, safe, cushy, fabulously well-paid job in one of these banks, you know, at an appropriately ridiculously high level in the ladder that would guarantee him to, you know, rise and be successful and end up at the top? Why did he push him instead into the Central Intelligence Agency and into the most nefarious operations of the Central Intelligence Agency, and pushed him so far into the forefront of those operations that he ends up getting named by the chief investigative officer of the United States government as a supervisor of people who are widely accepted by the most knowledgeable people as having been the major team involved in the assassination of the president? And so let me restate that question again in 12 words. Why didn't Prescott get him a plum of a job? Why did he push him into such a dangerous job that he has all this blood on his hands, right? It's very, very clearly.
All right. Is this a question that we should have call-ins and there's a prize for the right answer?
I don't think that's necessary. I just want people to stew on that. I want them to think on that, and then I'll tell you in advance that that's very, very, very central to the discussion that we're going to have today, when we get to the question of who murdered John Kennedy Jr. That understanding that sort of thing is going to end up being central. And I guess until I hear the music come up, I'm going to give a few hints on the answer to that question. I think I mentioned yesterday, and in any case, if I didn't, I'll mention it again today, that I taught for 20 years for LA Unified. I'm on a leave now. For 10 years, I was teaching at Jordan High School in Los Angeles, which is by all standards, the poorest high school in Los Angeles. It is in the heart of South Central Los Angeles. It's in Watts, which a lot of people will recognize the name of. In any case, the drug trade, I mean, it was at a school that was rife with drug trade. It's also a school that was rife with very, very hardcore gang members, and I have known, any number of students who were murdered, but also a number of students who were involved in murders and, you know, were flagrant about their gang affiliation, although some of them were some of the most intelligent students that I encountered. In any case, they explained to me that if you want to join the gang, you have to commit a murder. If you want to be able to sit down with the big, bad, old-time gangsters and laugh and make jokes, if you want to be in that inner circle of the gang, you have to commit a murder, and you have to commit
Okay, let me
murder.
Stop you. I got to stop you, John. We've got to go to a break. Okay, we'll be back in three. Save that thought. Michael Herzog of the American Awakening with my guest, John Hankey. We're talking about JFK Jr. now. All right? Be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Catholic priest calls on Catholics and Christians to resist an unjust attack against Iran. Father John Martinez, a Catholic priest, speaks out to declare the Catholic Church's true teaching, that it would be a mortal sin for Catholic soldiers to attack Iran. In a one-hour lecture, Father John Martinez warns about the Jewish plot to rule the world and to use the United States to ignite the flames of World War III by its satanic plan to unjustly attack Iran. He exposes that George Bush is Jewish and how Congress is controlled by the Jews. Father John Martinez gravely warns of nuclear weapons being used by the United States and the threat of the possible end of the world. For additional information on how you can help stop World War III, order Father John Martinez's CD entitled An Unjust Attack on Iran, available for $10 by Father John Martinez. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for the address.
Back. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, coming to you live from Phoenix, Arizona, with my guest John Hankey, talking about JFK Jr. Now, you were alluding to these gangs in L.A., John, and I guess in order to join the gang, they have to commit a murder to be able to sit with the other guys in the gang. Go ahead.
Yes, in the mafia, it's called being a made man, but before we get up into it, let's say BushKillJFK.com. Just get that one.
All right, just a second. Do me a favor, Carrie, turn the music down. Thank you. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
No problem. So my website with all this stuff is bushkilljfk.com. We had two things going on. The question was, why would Prescott Bush, the president's grandfather, have pushed his son, George Herbert Walker, into these really dangerous situations? Why would he put him in a position where he had such direct oversight of Kennedy's killers that he ends up getting named by J. Edgar Hoover? So that's the question that we want to try to approach, because it's going to be very, very relevant to the murder in trying to solve the murder of John Kennedy Jr. And then I pointed out, and it's sort of the answer, that if you want to join, if you want to sit in the inner circle of a gang in South Central L.A., you have to commit a murder. You have to commit it within the knowledge of the leaders of the gang, so that they can know that they're comfortable to discuss murder and mayhem and other high crimes and misdemeanors in front of you, because they know that you can't rat them out, because if you do, they can rat you out. It's a very, 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 very basic principle. It's a really, really critical and important principle in terms, I think, of understanding how these guys work. It's also how the mafia works. That's what, in mafia terminology, it's called being a made man. If, right, you get to sit down with the dons when you have committed a murder for them that they are witnesses to and that they know that they can hold over your head, so that they can now trust you, and so that, you know, you have you have established yourself in the network. You're now key in the network, and you're included. So I would suggest to you that the answer to the question is that if you want to join, if your last name when you're born isn't Rockefeller, and if it isn't Harriman or DuPont or one of the others, but you want to join that circle, and I don't mean to suggest that all the Rockefellers and all the DuPonts and all the Harrimans are in that circle, and it isn't. It's a chosen and a select few, and for the Rothschilds as well. I mean, anyway, I'm not going to go all the way off down that road, but if you want to join that inner circle, you have to commit a murder. And whether that applies only to the gangs of South Central or only to the Mafia, so we're speculating about whether it applies to the Illuminati or the Council on Foreign Relations inner circle or the Bohemian Grove inner circle or the Bilderberger inner circle, however you want to name these guys.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I mean, you know, when you're talking about inner circle and you're talking about secret societies, it reminds me of a clip, again, I have on my website, where George Jr. has just finished making a speech right after 9/11, you know, in a church, I believe. And his father is sitting next to his wife, Barbara Bush. His father, George Sr., is sitting next to his wife in the pews. And George Jr. walks down the aisle, sits down next to his wife on the right side of her. She's in the middle, and then George Sr. is on the other side. And George Sr. reaches over and grabs Jr.'s arm. Junior then takes his right hand and shakes his father's hand, and it's not a regular handshake, it's a Masonic handshake, and you can tell that in the video clip. And what my take from that was, John, is that since Junior had just been making a speech on the tragedy of 9/11, that it was, you know, it was an assurance from his father that the lie that he was telling on the pulpit was well told, if you know what I mean. So it's,
sure.
Again,
no,
it's that inner circle. Yeah.
That video clip is on my DVD, JFK2. There's a section on 9/11. There's three parts on that DVD, and the section on 9/11, I believe, begins and ends with that particular clip. And I never looked close and hard at the handshake that's going on, although the whole thing is very, very chilling. And it is stuck in there for that effect, right? I mean, I put it in there so you would get chilled, but it didn't occur to me to study the handshake that closely.
Oh, yeah. I ran it about six times, and I looked really, really close at the handshake, and it's a Masonic handshake.
In any case, this occurred to me, right? Given my background with gangbangers, it occurred to me, that is, gang members, that to look at George Bush's political career and see where it fits in with the Kennedy assassination and his political career. George Bush Sr.'s political career began 5 minutes after the Kennedy assassination. He announced for Senate in Texas, and he ran and lost. And the Republican Party in Texas picked him up and dusted him off and found him. They created for him during the next census, I guess, they redrew the congressional districts for whatever excuse they came up with. They redrew the congressional districts, and they created one that was all Republican, and they made him the Republican nominee from that district so that, the election didn't even count. He couldn't possibly have lost. And so they made him a congressman, and then he ran for Senate in Texas and lost again, and they picked him up, and they dusted him off, and they brought him into the White House under Nixon, and they made him the ambassador to the United Nations. And when Watergate started to break and people's heads were rolling, and he was totally in the thick of that, they made him ambassador to China, sent him off to China to get him out of the way. And when he comes back, he runs for president again against Reagan and for the Republican nomination and loses to Reagan. And by all accounts, Reagan then has him shoved down his throat. And 2 months later, something like that, there's an assassination attempt on Reagan. So this guy.
And there's a whole story behind that one as well. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, let's not go off down any of those roads. But the point that I want people to get is that the political career of Bush Sr. was launched with the murder of John Kennedy, and after having been made a made man in mafia parlance by that assassination, he was now untouchable. And he could not lose. He would not be allowed to lose, no matter how badly he did in any situation. They would always pick him up and dust him off and set him on top of the pile And so I'm now ready to start examining the evidence in the murder of John Kennedy Jr. But we need that in our background to be able to understand this stuff when it starts to get a little bit thin. And then, so let me say that as well, that when John Kennedy Sr. was murdered, thousands of very, very, very serious and very, very, very competent researchers immediately began, certainly with the murder of Oswald, thousands of very serious and competent people began investigating this assassination. There were thousands, again, of FBI agents who were assigned to investigating various aspects of it, and they all filed reports, in addition to which the Warren Commission gathered all of these documents. There's 24 volumes of documents. They conducted many witnesses, many interviews with lots of witnesses, and some of them were people who had been very much threatened and instructed on what they should say and should not say and came in and told a bunch of lies. But a lot of people got up there, including Marina Oswald, or I'm sorry, Oswald's mother said that Oswald was an agent, that he was of the U.S. government. She was certain, and that's in the Warren Commission documents. There is, in the death of John Kennedy Jr., there are probably about 50, maybe 60 or 70 important news articles that appeared in the next couple of weeks. There is the NTSB report, which is 500 pages, and I don't mean to downplay the importance of the NTSB report, but if it were the assassination of his father, it would have been 40,000 pages, and it was 500 pages, and it's 500 important pages. And as with the 9/11 Commission report, and as with the Warren Commission report, it's full of information that very, very clearly indicates that there was something very, very much amiss in his death, and that there is foul play involved, and that this was a murder. And you know, it's so there's a lot of very legitimate stuff that managed to get into that report, but it pales in comparison to the stuff in his father. All of that to say that the evidence in the murder of John Kennedy Jr. is comparatively very thin, but as we get into it, you'll see that it's very substantial. And I'll pause here for a comment or a question, and then I'm going to roll on.
No, I was going to say rock on. All right, let's get into this, because this is fascinating. I mean, you know, I'm a pilot, John, although I have never flown a Piper Saratoga, I'm very familiar with them. At one point in time, 1996, I was out shopping for airplanes. I wound up buying a Cessna 210 Centurion, but I did look at Piper Saratoga. I'm very familiar with that airplane and the avionics that he had in the airplane. And so, you know,
so you're going to be able to be very helpful along the line. But let's jump into it.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay, rock on. You got the floor.
Very good. Well, we'll come to the plane, and I'm very pleased to have a pilot in the audience. Anyway, the most outrageous thing, and I was very fortunate. I put up everything that I found on a website. I created a website. And fortunately, that got enough display that somebody who had gotten their hands on 6 hours of broadcast from the local ABC affiliate in Boston sent me a videotape. And so the DVD has all of these wonderful video clips from station WCV-TV in Boston. And one of the things that you see, and there's near outrage in the tone of the reporters, all of them, they're just scandalized at why didn't you do anything until 3 o'clock in the morning? Why did you not get a plane in the air until 7 o'clock in the morning? And in fact, the press conference has been going on for 2 hours. Oh, the press conference is going on. It's in raging full bloom. It's wonderful. This woman, Martha Raddatz, from I think she's from People Magazine, and she asks a question about this stuff, and they cut her off and they go to static. And so then after a while, they come back and pretend that she didn't ask that question. And the next reporter comes in, and this woman, I think, is from ABC. And she says, don't you have the radar information that shows that the plane crashed 14 miles off of Martha's Vineyard? And this poor sap, and I don't want to call him a poor sap, he's an evil bastard, working for the Pentagon. And it's interesting, the guy answering the questions, he's the former head of search and rescue. He's not the head of search and rescue. He's now the head of the search and rescue school. But what is he doing there? right? He's not supposed to be involved, but he is involved, and in fact, he's taken over the coverage of the reporting of the non-search and rescue, and he's confronted with this, and he tells three very bald-faced lies to try to answer this question about this delay. Long story short, the Pentagon delayed the search for the plane. They ordered the Coast Guard away from the approaches to Martha's Vineyard for 15 and a half hours. They wouldn't let them go there. They ordered the Civil Air Patrol to stay over the landmass of Martha's Vineyard. They wouldn't let them go there. And so for 15 and a half hours, you have this sort of scandal going on. But now we're going to go through and we're going to look at the various events that show what a particular outrage this is, that they could have delayed things for so long. And the first of them is that the fact that John Kennedy Jr. contacted the tower at Martha's Vineyard announcing that he was on final approach, that he was 14 miles away, and getting permission to land, which he was then granted. Now, this, we get this information, and it's in the videotape. You get to hear Todd Vergun, who was the spokesman for the Coast Guard, saying that the Coast Guard has this information that Kennedy contacted the tower. And then he disappears for the rest of the day. He says this at about 10:30 in the morning, and he is not heard from for the rest of the day. They have different Coast Guard spokesmen, and they have the Pentagon take over the reporting of the news and announce that, and it's again this guy Steve Rourke says, well, I don't know about anything, except the one thing that I can tell you is that he did not contact the tower at Martha's Vineyard. Now, how could he not know anything but that? Well, that's one. And the other thing is that the NTSB report shows that at 9:38, John Kennedy was at 5,000 feet and began to descend, and that at 9:39, he leveled off at 2,500 feet, which is what you have to do. You're not allowed to descend below 2,500 feet until you contact the tower. And presumably, when he hit 2,500 feet, we can presume that, and he was, you know, he was lined up, he was on final approach. The guy's name is Marks, and I'm trying to remember his first name. He was Kennedy's first flight instructor. He was his flight instructor for 20 years. Kennedy flew for 20 years, Arthur Marks, and this guy flew with him in and around Martha's Vineyard, geez, I don't know, probably 100 times. And so I'm reading him the NTSB report of the last moments, the last seconds of the plane, and he says, oh, yeah, John, that's John lining up with the southern coast on final approach. So the NTSB report, taken together with Arthur Marks's information, lets us know that, yes, he was indeed on final approach. It was 9:39. He was 14 miles off, and presumably during the next 50 seconds, he contacted the tower and got permission to land, and then the plane shot straight down into the water. Now, that's enormously important. The point is that Vergun's report is absolutely corroborated by the NTSB report. There's absolutely no reason to doubt it. It does raise the question of why the Pentagon is lying about it, but we'll set that aside for the moment and focus on the fact that if you contact the tower, and I'm glad I got a pilot here, the FAA regulations say that if you contact the tower, that you're on final approach and you don't land in 5 minutes, they are to begin a search for you. They didn't begin a search in 5 minutes. They didn't begin a search for 15 and a half hours. If you contact the tower, if you contact a air traffic facility, John Kennedy's plane, and I believe all planes at this point, but in 1999 it might have only been most of the planes, it was Kennedy's plane in any case. If you contact air traffic control, you have in your plane a thing called a transponder. And your transponder goes off and it tells the radar. It emits a radar signal so that you have the passive radar signal, that is to say that the airport sends out its radar beam, and it's going to hit you if you're a hot air balloon, and an echo is going to come back and tell them that you're there. But the transponder sends out another radio signal that's picked up by the air traffic control facilities independently. If their radar went out, they would still be able to pick up your signal that tells them who you are and what your altitude is and what your global position is. Right. And if you
they give you what they call a squawk. They'll give you a code. And by the way, all the light aircraft have transponders, and it's all set at 1200. When you take off, you call the flight air traffic control, and they give you a squawk number, which might be 4602 or whatever.
But
so yes, they can track
number.
Your visual.
Yes,
it's a discreet number that distinguishes you from every other plane in the air, so that they now know, in addition to your position and your altitude, they also know who you are. You're now identified. They have your N number, right?
Right.
Kennedy's plane had one of those, and so he contacted air traffic control, which means they would have given him this, which means his plane would have been squawking a discreet code telling them that who it is, that's whose plane. And the other thing about it is that they have a computer system so that if you descend below, I think it's 100 feet, any place but on the tarmac of your target destination, it sets off an alarm at the air traffic control facility so that the people at the air traffic control facility, the FAA, knew that Kennedy's plane had gone down before it hit the water, right? That alarm would have gone off before the plane hit the water, and yet it took them 15 and a half hours to begin the search. It's crazy. In addition,
well, I'll tell you, yeah, John, as a pilot, I'll tell you this, and then you know that John's plane had an ELF,
electronic. I was about to talk about that. But go ahead.
Yeah, but, I mean, they could have found, they knew, you know, with the radar, when it went off of radar, I mean, it wasn't off of radar, but it dropped right into the water. And by the way, a Piper Saratoga or a Piper Warrior or a Cessna 210 Centurion, in order for that to happen, in order for it to drop that far, that fast, would be impossible, with the exception of a bomb going off in it, going straight down. Well, we got a break. We'll be back in three. Michael Herzog, The American Weekend. I'll finish this thought when we get back. Stick with us. Got more. It's better.
Take the heat out of your sleep. The Bedfan Personal Cooling System will work for anyone that is a hot sleeper, regardless of the reason. It gives you a deep, restful sleep, the way nature intended. No more tossing and turning. Say goodbye to sleepless nights. So ask yourself, are you a hot sleeper and really want to sleep cooler? A woman who suffers from the effects of menopause, including night sweats derived from hot flashes, have a medical condition that causes your body to get hot at night, or just want to save money on your air conditioning bill? It works instantly. No tools or assembly required. Don't worry. The Bedfan fits short beds, tall beds, beds with footboards, sleigh beds, water beds, and many other types of beds. If you want great relief and total comfort, give us a call at 1-210-632-8280. That's 1-210-632-8280. Or visit our site at bedfan.com. Your provider for great sleep.
Hi, friends. Bill Bagley from Vital Basics, and I want to send you a bottle of the best-selling supplement Focus Factor absolutely free. Why would we give away a free bottle of Focus Factor? Because we know that if you try it, you'll buy it. Focus Factor has nutrients that work with your natural brain chemistry to support your memory, concentration, and focus. People all over the country say it's the best brain support supplement they've ever tried. Well, how would you like to try Focus Factor yourself absolutely free? No, we're not crazy. We're confident. Because once you try Focus Factor, you'll wonder how you ever got along without it. And that's why, for a limited time, we'll give you a full-size bottle of Focus Factor, an $85 value, free. You simply provide $4.95 to help cover the cost of shipping and handling. Call now for your free bottle of Focus Factor. Call 1-800-518-3796. That's 1-800-518-3796. Limit one bottle per household, please. Again, the number is 1-800-518-3796.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our renewable energy solar program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our renewable energy solar system converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year that is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permanent hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner at RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
I'm not ready to make nice. I'm not ready.
Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, coming to you live from Phoenix, Arizona, with my guest, John Hanke. Short segment coming up to the top of the hour, and we're talking about JFK Jr., the assassination. And I was making a point, John, about the airplane itself. There's only two possibilities of how that plane could have fallen. I believe it was 2,500 feet so quickly, and that would be either one, that there was a bomb that went off in that plane and it went straight down, or that somebody in that airplane pushed on the yoke and forced it down. One of the two possibilities, because even if you shut the gas valve off and there's no fuel in that airplane and you just let go of the yoke, it will glide and lose probably 500 to 600 feet a minute.
Right, and in fact, he was at 2,500 feet, so he's got 5 minutes,
right?
During which time he can probably make close to a mile, anyhow, the better part of a mile.
No, he would have actually. How far out was the airport when he called him?
He was 10 miles off the coast. He was 14 miles from the airport.
He could have glided most likely about 5 miles. With no power at all.
And he could have contacted the tower, and they could have sent out the search and rescue people and been waiting for him when he came down, right? They could conceivably have gotten out of that plane without getting wet.
Exactly, and even with what happened, I mean, you know, whatever happened, okay, they still, and I'm saying from the moment that plane hit the water, they knew exactly where he was. Because they had an ELF in the airplane, okay? There was a location device in that airplane. They knew where he was.
Right, an emergency locator transmitter is what they were calling it in 1999. They may have been calling it something else, but the many people that I talked to at the FAA and at the Coast Guard called it an ELT, an emergency locator transmitter. And that's the other thing, right, is that Kennedy's plane had an emergency locator transmitter. So he contacted the tower, they knew where he was. Two, he had contacted the tower and therefore had his squawk box, his starts with a T and the name of it has now escaped me. His transponder was telling them his location. And in addition to that, he also had an emergency locator transmitter. Now, the thing that's killer, and we saw a reflection of this earlier, that the reporters who are questioning this guy at the Pentagon about why do you have the planes scattered all over the place when the radar shows that the plane crashed off the coast of Martha's Vineyard, the media people had the radar information in their hand. The Coast Guard did not. The media people, and it's in my video, ABC put up a graphic showing the emergency locator transmitter and showing the location of where the emergency locator transmitter went off in the waters off the coast of Martha's Vineyard. The media knew that the emergency locator transmitter had gone off, but the people who were responsible for the search and rescue did not. Now, we'll take up the issue of the bomb anytime you want, but we can do it now or later.
Let's do it later. Okay, that's fine. I wanted to insert, though. I got an email yesterday when we had put out, you know, our little titillating comments for today's show. I got an email from a listener that said he looked at a blurb for your JFK Jr. video, and he said there's a problem with it.
Uh-huh.
Says the blurb says the plane was down by shutting off the fuel, and Sherman Skolnick wrote that a classified FBI report said that the plane was blown up, most likely by a bomb with a barometric detonator.
We'll come back to all that as soon as this.
I wanted to get your take on that. And anyway, we're coming up to the top of the hour. Folks, call your friends, neighbors, and relatives. We've got another hour of this. I'm going to open up the phone lines probably about 15 minutes into the second hour. Great show. A lot of information coming out here on JFK Jr. So stick with us. We'll be right back. Michael Herzog of The American Awakening with my special and very knowledgeable guest, John Hanke. See you in 2 minutes.